All right, we are recording. Jason, this is Photo Focus with Frederick Van Johnson on the mark in 3, 2, 1. So glad to have you back on another edition of the Photo Focus podcast. And again, today we are lucky to be joined by my good buddy and pal, Frederick Van Johnson, all the way from California. Hi, Frederick.
Hey, Scott. Glad to be on again.
Everybody was so excited about your last appearance, we decided to bring you back right away because, well, let's just face it, you're cool.
You know, I'm cool in my own mind, but I'm glad some people think that.
I got my new iPhone 4S and I asked Siri. I said, Siri, is Frederick Van Johnson cool? And she said, yes.
She said, it is decidedly so.
Yeah. Right? We're going to do what we've been doing the last couple of shows. We're going to change the format up a little bit. We're going to just sort of talk photography. Frederick and I are old friends who talk about photography when we're not on podcasts, when we're just hanging. And so what we're going to do is just basically let you listen in on that conversation. Then we're going to take a couple of your questions. If you do have questions for the show, you can send them to photofocus@me. That's M like Mary, E like Edward, me.com. Can't guarantee you we'll answer them because, frankly, we get thousands of them. But we'll pick a couple of the pithy ones. If you include your name and town, and it's short and sweet, and there's just one question, you increase your odds of getting it on the show. If you ask me a 10-part question, there's about a 10 billion percent chance that I will not answer it. So I'm just saying. Today's show is brought to you by ViewBug. ViewBug is the place to go for photo contests. It's a community that awards, promotes, and shares photography. One of my new favorite places for contests. I have found so many fun contests there. And I want you to know that you want to pay very close attention to the photofocus.com website because we're going to be announcing a contest at ViewBug next week. With more than $10,000 worth of prizes.
Nice.
Yes.
Wow. So, can I enter that, Scott?
No. Sorry. Dang. Also, today's show is brought to you by Animoto. That's my favorite way to share my work when I want to send a slideshow to somebody. If you ever watched MTV, and I can't imagine you haven't, and you see all the cool cuts and transitions and animations, they do that for you over there at Animoto. It's as cheap as free and goes all the way up to $250 a year. You can try it out at Animoto.com. There are banners for both those fine sponsors available on the Photofocus site. Frederick, let's talk about iPhone first today. I got my iPhone 4S, the 8 megapixel camera. I'm going to tell you right now, it just stunned me. It stunned me how good it is. And I at CES, we had people making announcements like Minox saying, we're going out of the digital camera business because anybody in the $200 and under category has got real competition from a $200 cell phone. What do you think?
I think that's a wise decision for them. I think in a lot of ways that before when iPhones first came out, it was a whole thinking that, wow, this camera's pretty good. It's good enough. You know, maybe I can start leaving my point and shoot at home. And then now with this 8 megapixel camera in here, it's more than good enough. I mean, because you have in the palm of your hand, Scott, you have a really good camera. You have a software processing engine. You have lighting and you have connectivity to share it with the world. You know, so all that stuff comes together like in no other place. You know, I mean, on other smartphones, yeah, but like in no other place can you go out and take a picture of this great landscape and do all this magic stuff to it, stitch it together. And then before you leave that place, thousands of people, or in your case, hundreds of thousands of people could have seen that shot before you even finish enjoying the view, you know? So I mean, that's the magic of iPhone photography and portable mobile photography. But the thing that stuns me, Scott, is that we are in February of 2012, and you're just now getting this phone?
Well, here's the thing.
What's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was kind of waiting to check out. I moved to Las Vegas, and when I moved here, I decided to change from AT&T to Verizon because AT&T's famous customer service motto, we're not happy until you're not happy, had driven me away. And then I wanted to see how Verizon would do. And everyone talks about how great Verizon is, and it is great, except, you know, it doesn't work at my house or at my office or on the Strip. And those are the three places I spend most of my life. So I decided to get rid of that. So that was an excuse to then go ahead and move to Sprint, which is has the best coverage, in my opinion, in the city of Las Vegas, and that's when I went ahead and got the 4S.
Yeah.
But I will say that I heard from you that apparently there's going to be a school with a class on iPhoneography.
Yeah, the school in London, and we touched on this a little bit before, the school in London has decided that they need a full curriculum on iPhoneography. And I don't even know if that's a word yet, but we're going to say it's a word. I'm going to scratch that. On iPhone photography. Because I don't think, and I want to talk about this. I was looking forward to talking to you about this guy. Because the whole idea of iPhone photography, yeah, it's great. These cameras are great for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier. But it's photography, right? Yeah, I mean, exactly. You're not saying that, hey, look, the new Nikon came out, so I'm a Nikonographer. You know, you are a photographer first and foremost, and the tool that you use shouldn't matter. I don't know. Yeah, that's just me. But yeah, they have a whole curriculum out there that's about how, I think for me, from my perspective, I think that they're being clever marketers at this school, and they're just trying to ride the wave of iPhone adoption to get people to take the class. And then once they get them into the class, it'll be a bait and switch, and it'll end up being about lighting, exposure, and composition.
Right.
But still,
The thing is, if you were people are all the time asking me, how can I get the most out of my iPhone camera or my Android camera or my whatever camera that's in their smartphone?
Yeah.
And the answer is really quite simple. Treat it like you would any other camera. Pay attention. Be respectful of the camera. Look at the settings. Learn how to use them. Be careful how you mount the camera. Buy one of the cheap adapters that lets you put it on a tripod. Make sure you have good light and good composition. With all those things, even the older iPhone cameras produced publishable photographs. So
yeah.
you know, if you have a point and shoot even, it's the same thing. People say, well, all I got's a point and shoot. Well, if you treat a point and shoot, let's say you get the new Nikon P7001. I think that's the new number. I can't keep track of them all. You put that thing on a tripod, you pay attention to learning how to use the settings, you set it up properly, you can make a photograph that'll be printable anywhere in the world. It's not the camera, it's the photographer. And the only thing that bugs me sometimes about these iPhone things, Frederick, is like I get these press releases and they're going, watch the first motion picture ever produced on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the deal. If to get me to watch the movie, the gimmick is to have produced it on an iPhone, that tells me right away the movie's no good. It's like, if the movie's good enough, I don't give a rat's you know what how you produced it. I don't care.
Tell me after the fact, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me after the fact and let me be pleasantly surprised instead of, because if you tell me before, I'm going to go into the movie looking for problems, like, or I'll think that, oh, they're saying it was shot with an iPhone so that they can, you know, sort of position away and say that, oh, here's an excuse of why it's not as good as if it was shot with a Red, because we did on iPhone. Look how good it is, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to impress me with the story and then, like, just make it this compelling thing, and then at the end, hey, guess what? This entire thing was shot on an iPhone. Then my jaw would drop, you know, not before.
Yeah, I have the same problem with, by the way, anybody that uses a gimmick to sell their pictures, like, well, I shoot only in film. And I'm like, well, if your pictures are good, I don't care how you shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, they're not better because you shoot them with film, or better because you shot them with an iPhone, or better because you shot them with a digital photograph. Or those who say, I never Photoshop my pictures, I don't care at all.
Right.
All I want to know is what the final product is and if it's good. And, you know, if you have to tell me it's good because you used an iPhone, here's news for you. It ain't good.
That's
how
right.
many beautiful women, I mean, truly just eyeball-gouging beautiful women, Frederick, have you ever met that had to walk up to you and say, by the way, I'm beautiful?
Yeah, exactly. You know, on that whole qualifier thing, Scott, you know, me personally, I only shoot with available light.
Yeah.
Yeah, what am I going to say next?
Yeah, I'm going to say it for you. I got me a flash. I can have that light available anywhere I want it to be.
Exactly. I shoot with any light that's available to me. If it's the sun, I use that. If it's a lamp, I'll use that.
All right. Well, let's move on to another very hot topic. The new Nikon D800 was finally announced. The Nikon fanboys had a fangasm, a collective fangasm.
You're looking at me, aren't you?
Yeah,
I know you're looking at me.
I made that word up just now, by the way.
I like that. I like that.
And of course, it really would not have mattered what the press release said, what language it was in, what features it listed. The Nikon fanboys, their little heads would have popped right off their necks and said, that's good.
Yes and no.
And by
yes
the way, and let me finish. Before you start writing me emails of hate, I would say that about the Canon fanboys when the Canon announcements comes out too. So there you go.
I take exception to the word fanboy. Okay. Because people call you, you're a Mac fanboy. If you like something, then suddenly you're a fanboy. How come you just can't be somebody that likes it?
I'm not talking about that. I mean, that I get. I'm talking about the people that will defend the inadequacies in the camera beyond all reason.
Oh, right. Yeah, that is a fanboy.
The mindless, mind-numbing cheerleading, regardless of facts, or the complete ignorance of facts, or the complete throwing out of facts. And by the way, there's a fanboy for everything I've found out. I was surprised to find out that there are even AT&T fanboys, which has got to be a pretty lowly, lonely bunch. But
we love drop calls.
Anyway, so here's the thing. The D800, at first blush, I was pretty excited, and I'm reading down the spec list. I'm going, wow, check that out. Full frame sensor, that's good. And full HD 1080p at 30, 25, and 24 frames a second, and separate mic inputs and all that stuff. So they're finally paying attention to video. But then, then I had a little boo-boo when I thought, 4 frames a second? That's it? Okay, well, it's not a big deal. And then I saw 36.3 megapixels. I'm like, really? Yeah. Are we back to the megapixel war again? Haven't we learned a thing? Haven't you guys in the marketing department got anything new to hang your hat on?
Well, maybe Nikon said, you know what? We've pushed the bounds of ISO sensitivity to 25,600. And we, aside from harnessing black hole gravity power, we can't pull any more light out of a scene. So what's next? How about megapixels again? what else can they do? I mean, how much more light sensitive can you make a camera? Back in the day when people said, we don't need more than a 1.4 megabyte floppy, but still.
Why couldn't we have gone with something cool like built-in Wi-Fi so that you can immediately upload your pictures to Flickr? That would have been cool. We don't need the megapixel wars. Okay, so here it is. You can hate me all you want, and before you say that I'm a Nikon hater, you can come visit my closet where you will find 5 Nikon D3Ss, 1 Nikon D3, 1 Nikon D7000, 1 Nikon P7000, 1 Nikon P7100 or whatever the new one is. So I got plenty of Nikons.
And 1 inch of dust on all of them.
Well, I got dust on everything around me, dude. I'm old. So I'm not against Nikon, but I am against putting 36.3 megapixels onto a sensor that used to hold 12 and then being told somehow it'll be okay. Because last time I checked, E still equals MC squared. Physics is physics, folks. And when you cram 3 times the pixels onto the same size wafer, something has got to give.
Yeah, but, yes, I agree with that. But in the defense of Nikon, we haven't had this camera in our hands yet. So
no, we haven't, but we sure have seen some sample photographs.
We've seen samples, but you can't make any determinations until you actually shoot with it. And throw the images into Lightroom or Aperture and zoom in on the eyelash and say, holy crap.
I zoomed in on the eyelash of the image that they provided me, and I said, holy crap, all right, but it was the wrong direction. As far as I was concerned, it was fairly detailless.
But look at this guy. Like, look at it from a different perspective. I'm looking at the Nikon site right now. I'm looking at the camera, and I'm thinking to myself, back in the day, and I hate using that phrase, but like back when we were happy with, say, a Nikon F3. Or an FM2, and we were doing some crazy, insane work with the limitations, almost like what we're doing with the iPhone now, because you're limited, but back then we were creative. We're like, oh man, let me do this. Let me put it on a tripod. Let me try this. Let me get some star trails and all this crazy stuff. And now we're like complaining that Nikon has given us 36.3 megapixels. I think we're missing. I think we're both at fault, both Nikon and the consumers, because I think Nikon is a company, right? So they got to make money. They got to find new and exciting ways to get us to go buy their new latest gear. So, okay, they have to do that. But on the photographer side, this is like I mean, it's like, okay, looking at this camera, it's like, okay, I need a new Porsche to go through the drive-thru at McDonald's, you know?
Well, if you'd seen that girl that works at the McDonald's over on Eastern, you probably would agree. But, okay, now here's
what kind of Happy Meal you want.
Right? Ooh, send your cards and letters to Frederick Van Johnson, please. Here's the thing. I did in my quick take on photofocus.com say that I do reserve judgment. I will wait to see the final thing. Mm-hmm. I know that they are doing tricks these days with, you know, both the processors. The back end part of this system is the X-Speed processor, which does a lot of fancy gimmickry to make things look better. And I know that they have created some technologies that enable the pixel sites to gather more light, so that probably accounts for an increase, let's say, of, you know, 1.5 times the pixels. Let's say you could have gone from 12 to 18 maybe, but to go all the way to 36, like I said, I'm willing to make final judgment after I see the camera, but, you know, I don't need to go out with a spectrometer to figure out that the sky is blue and the grass is green and up is up and down is down. I mean, physics are physics, Frederick, and there's just no chance that this camera can be as noiseless as it would have been at, let's say, 18 megapixels. And remember when we were all enamored with the LS3 point and shoot because it had fewer megapixels than the Canon? Remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
See, I'm thinking this would have been their opportunity to really siphon off a bunch of 5D Mark III users, because there's no announcement on the 5D Mark III, and had they seen this D800 and it came in at, let's say, 18 megapixels, they'd have jumped like crazy. But now they're all saying what a lot of other people are saying, 36 megapixels doesn't make sense. Now, what may happen is that we may get this camera and they may have created some technology that's fooled us all. We look at it and go, dang, it works. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm open to that. And I do think it has a lot of potential if you're a portrait photographer, because detail is less important to portrait photographers, because actually Granny doesn't want every one of her lines and wrinkles showing in the portrait.
Well, no, I would yes and no.
Granny does want the line showing in the portrait.
Granny does not. Okay. But a portrait photographer, let's flip it to the other side. The retoucher of those images needs those pixels to be able to adequately remove the granny's wrinkles.
Oh, that's what,
and you
that's
don't want to capture them. I mean, you want to capture everything that's in the scene and then have the power later to manipulate and massage those pixels. So that's why these, you know, high-end fashion magazine photographers are shooting with phase and all that stuff, because they need all those pixels.
I think we're making the same point. I'm saying it does make sense if you're a portrait photographer. Mm-hmm. To have this 36 megapixels.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Now, I get that, because you're right. It does make it makes editing easier, and detail isn't as important. But, you know, and obviously they're not aiming this camera at people who, like me, shoot birds, because 4 frames a second, that's a laugher. I'm getting the D4. I'm having the first D4 in North America on my desk, period. That's nice. Happening. So, you know, don't call me a Nikon basher, because I'm buying 5D4s, okay? I'm just saying the D800 has me really confused. I don't understand the marketing decisions here. I'm hoping Nikon can convince me I'm wrong. I am very excited about the video. Now, here's the other thing. On Twitter, a whole bunch of alleged Emmy Award-winning blah, 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 blah cinematography people were telling me, oh, we need these 36 megapixels for this and this and this to get a better video shot, followed up by people like Philip Bloom and other respected video people saying, nah, that's all balderdash. Yeah. So we're right back to the I hate it, I love it, I hate it, I love it, pick your side.
Which is all moot until you actually get the thing in your hands, right?
When I have one in my hand, and I will have the first one available that I can get. I mean, the day they're shipping, I'll have one. I will do a thorough test. And I'm hoping to be convinced to buy the camera.
Now, Scott, you have 1 foot in video and 1 foot in still. So looking at this camera with a videographer or DSLR video shooter's hat, how do you think it stacks up to the Canon?
I think Nikon is pretty much caught up to Canon, although, again, I'll get a million emails from super tech geeks that'll explain to me one tiny little thing that's not as good on this as the Canon. I think to the naked eye, here's where I'm making my judgments. I've seen the video that they put together with this camera, and I've seen the stills they put together with this camera. The stills leave me thoroughly unimpressed. There's not enough detail in them to suit me. The video, on the other hand, knocked my socks off. So I would say if you are into video, this camera goes a very long way towards solving all the problems. So Nikon just sort of ignored video for 2 years while Canon just took over.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they let Canon do their market research for them.
Well, that's possible. But, you know, I'm thinking back to a couple of CESs ago and or PPAs, I can't remember where it was, where the Canon booth was nothing but video. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It was all video all day, all the time. And in the Nikon booth, they, you know, they had good old Tom Bowl showing his nature pictures for the 4,000th time. And there was like a 12 by 12 inch frame with the word "We do video too" somewhere around the back of the booth. And that was about as much attention as they had paid to it. Now they've really ramped up. On paper, this baby looks very capable and very affordable as a video camera. I do want to say and commend Nikon for saying that this camera is coming out with a list price that matches the D700's list price when it launched.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. It's $3,000, right?
Yeah, it's $29.95. Now, we all know that the D700 eventually fell to about $2,500, and I guess that'll happen here too. But anyway, that's the hubbub about the D800. We're going to go on to something else real quick. But I do want to mention that if you want to test these cameras on your own and you do not want to buy them, there's a great place to do that. It's called borrowlenses.com. It's an online camera gear rental megaplex. You know, they've got everything. You can rent. You can even, I tell you what, they take care of everybody, even the five or six of you that use Sony.
You really want some hate mail, don't you?
Hey, I get lonely without it. They take care of everybody. If you can name a brand, they probably got the lens, the camera, and now they've even got RED cameras. They've got cinema stuff. They've got everything you need. You really, if you haven't looked at their website lately, you really need to go to borrowlenses.com. And also, in my humble opinion, well, I don't really have a humble opinion, so in my opinion.
Thank you for saying that, because I was going to say
it. Smug Mug Pro is the way to go if you want to sell your photos. The professional photo sharing there is geared towards professionals. It's all about selling your pictures. And as I say every show, because it's true, for 3 years, long before they were a sponsor of this particular podcast or our website, we've used Smug Mug to host our videos because the video quality on Smug Mug surpasses anything on Vimeo, surpasses anything on YouTube, surpasses anything anywhere. They don't compress the video, and the terms of service means they don't steal it either, like a lot of these important other places do. You really need to check out Smug Mug if you're either selling photos or doing video. There are links to all these sites at photofocus.com where we host all kinds of photography information 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and we have since November 2nd, 1998. And we will continue to as long as I am alive, but we're not guaranteeing that will be more than the next 15 minutes, given my advanced age and all.
You're right. Scott, you're like what? You're like 42. Come on.
Yeah, I got shoes older than that. Anyway, I do want to talk about one more topic, Frederick, that I think is important. This week, a photographer in South America was murdered, as in killed dead, for taking pictures of a monument. And I wrote a piece yesterday called How to Protect Yourself in the War on Photography, and several of the pedants and the trolls, not saying that they're the same, you can be a pedant without being a troll, attacked me for using the word war. Of course, again, remember these same people that would attack me if I say fish live in water, so you have to keep that in mind. But, you know, I do apologize, Frederick. War was the wrong word.
What's the right word?
Absolute total genocide.
Wow.
That's better.
All right. You got to define that.
Well, listen.
The people that got upset about the word war are sharpening their pencils right now.
Yeah, and I'm real worried about that, too. Anyway, it is a war. I'm using the word war. I'm sticking with it. You know, people are getting murdered. That's when I start thinking war might be appropriate. People are getting jailed and beaten. Yeah, war could be appropriate there, too. People are losing their property, sometimes their livelihoods. Yep, that sort of sounds like a war to me. People's civil rights are being ignored, trampled, forgotten about. Sounds like a war to me. And this has all, of course, been precipitated by 9/11. And if you have a, this is my favorite part, a professional looking camera, we'll put air quotes around that, then you might be a terrorist. Right here in my own city of Las Vegas, there are billboards that say, "See something? Say something." And then they specifically target photographers.
You know, why, just like to dig down to the epidural layer of that, or the you know, to a level deeper on where this is coming from. Is it just plain, you know, human nature, hysteria, and paranoia? Or is it, you know, another way for countries to control their peoples? You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what I'm trying to get to understand, like, if I go out with my camera in a public place and I have, and it's a quote, air quotes, professional looking camera, and I put down some sticks and I say, you know, I want to do some HDR of this wonderful looking old monument. And I'm just sitting there minding my own business, taking pictures of it. Have we gotten to the point now where me doing that is suspect and I'm now documenting that building? And if I was a terrorist, that's how I would choose to document it. Is it?
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Well, like standing there with my tripod in front of the building.
Yeah. That's how all terrorists work. You know, they draw attention to themselves. They make sure everybody sees them. They ignore the fact that the plans of that building are all available on Google. The pictures of it from both an aerial and topographical view are available on Google.
Yeah.
And that you can take a look at it on all four corners with Google's drive-by. So, you know, they ignore all that. And they
in terrorist school, they're probably saying, okay, you need to get a Scotty vest, you need a baseball hat, you know, with a camera on it, and you need a tripod and a professional looking camera, and then you will be stealthy.
Well, you know, I've interviewed Justice Department officials, police, municipalities. I've challenged people in the United States to provide me with a single, just one piece of documentary evidence that shows photography played a key role and even an attempted terrorist attack. So far, no takers.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. People, you know, for a long time, people kind of don't – there are two groups of people. There are authority figures that – you know, there's been a battle between the police and the Fourth Estate, i.e. the press, forever. You know, If a cop knocks a guy off a bicycle like that one that you can find on YouTube, or stomps on his head like they just did here in Henderson, Nevada, and it's on video or if there's stills of it, they don't particularly enjoy the fact that they've been busted. So yeah, they use any excuse they can to hassle a photographer. But you have the normal citizens, and I don't think in their heart they really think you're a terrorist. I just think they're busybodies, they're nosy, and you know, they don't like it that you got a camera, and so you know, they go tell on you, and it makes them feel important. I really don't know. I mean, I'm sounding cynical and difficult on purpose here a little bit because I'm trying to get a rise out of people. But I really don't know. I'm shocked that people think that a real terrorist would go to the trouble of buying all that gear. I mean, if a terrorist is going to do it, they're going to use an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or some sort of stealthy thing that's mounted in their hat or something, right?
Now, what's going to happen, though, let's say 15 years from now, when an iPhone is going to blow away the quality of a D800 or a D4,
mm-hmm.
then how are they going to know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like you look back at the Constitution, right? And the Second Amendment says, you know, it's the right to bear arms, right? So we can go around and in some states you can wear it. You know, they have carry laws. You can actually put it on your and. Put it on your waist and walk around with it.
Right here in Nevada, you can go outside and you will see, you know, 1 in 10 people got a gun right on their hip.
Right, you know, and I'm sure every one in one person in Texas might have.
I think it's supposed to be 2 guns for every person.
Exactly, you got to have this side.
I think you, in order to get a birth certificate in Texas, you have to have 2 firearms.
There you go.
I'm not
but
sure.
But when the founding fathers of this country put the Constitution together and they came up with the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. I'm sure they weren't thinking about photography at all. So we consequently have no rights when it comes to photography. It's whatever, you know, I mean, there's no freedom of speech. There's no freedom to shoot. It's just, you know, whatever that local.
Well, we have the rights, Frederick. They've just decided to usurp them. And
yeah. I mean, do we really? I mean, where is it written that says you are allowed to shoot? Where you are allowed to shoot pictures freely of whatever you want to shoot? There's no right to shoot pictures
of whatever you want to shoot, but there is a right, for instance, if you do any research with a couple of organizations that have been at the forefront of this, ASMP, the American Society of Media Photographers, the National Association of Professional Photojournalists, NAP, and the ACLU all have done work establishing that photography is a protected Second Amendment right, and in a public place, on public property, people who stand in public property have no right to privacy, so you can take their picture and they can't stop you. Yeah. Now, there are other more complicated rights we would need to get a lawyer on to talk about, that talk about the rights of publicity, you know, the right to use the photograph commercially, but to take the picture is not illegal in a public space. And what has happened, there have been some organized groups that have gone, for instance, down to places in L.A. and New York where they've stood on public property and taken pictures of the federal bank building and had the rent-a-cops come out and say, you can't do that. And they're like, yeah, I actually can. And those cases have gone to court, and the police have often paid big judgments against, you know, beating up the photographer. My favorite story about all this – and there's a guy in Miami, and I cannot remember his name. It's Carlos something. I can't remember who gets himself arrested every day to try to prove this point. He's a hero in my mind. I think he sometimes takes it too far, but he's trying. He has good intentions. The Boston subway system had a photography contest, right? They sponsored it. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was a come take pictures. You know, we're having this great contest, and it was a marketing thing. And then the Boston subway police arrested everybody that walked down in the subway with a camera. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, people.
That's awesome. I don't know.
If that's not a war on photography, I don't know what is. So the reason
I think of it, Scott, like, before you go on, just like I tend to oversimplify things a lot, you know, because it helps my brain understand things. And when your eye and your brain are essentially cameras, right? So when you go into a public place, say I go into Washington, D.C., and I'm standing in front of the you know, some government building, and I'm looking at that building like, oh, wow, look at this. This is historic. It's beautiful. You know, I am recording it with my eyes, right? So mm-hmm. The minute I put something mechanical in front of my face to allow me to remember that longer, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and despite the fact that there are a billion photos, you know, out there of it already.
Right. You know, so they're legislating how long I can remember it, because if I can just look at it, then that's okay, because I probably forget it. But if I use electronic or artificial means to remember that longer, like a digital camera, then I'm a terrorist.
You know, actually, I think the government invented Alzheimer's for that very reason.
It's a side effect of that. Men in black pen, right?
I believe that the government invented Alzheimer's so that our visual memories of important government buildings will eventually be erased. Well, it boils down to this. I wrote the piece because I wanted to kind of prove that it's all bogus, and here's how I've proved it. I've gone places, and with a little grease, as in, you know, hiring the local police officers that are off duty to stand guard while you shoot, all of a sudden now it's not a terroristic issue.
Oh. You know,
$50 will get you in here. Otherwise, it's sacred land. I mean, you know, it just boils down to it's like everything else. Most things track down to money. If these were truly security threats, you wouldn't be able to buy a police escort to go into them. So I simply mentioned on my post, and I got a lot of heat for it, but, you know, that it works. Whenever I'm going someplace where I think I might get hassled, I just call the local police union, find out how to hire an off-duty officer. He stands there with me, and I can do anything I want.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the money – now, several people attacked me because I said this. And they said, well, yeah, you can afford it. We can't. I did offer an alternative in the article if you'd have kept reading. And the alternative is you don't have to hire a police escort. Sometimes you just go tell them what you're doing, and that will be enough to get them to leave you alone. I use this tactic whenever I go into a national park, even though I have an absolute right. It's in the code. By the way, you were asking where these rights are established. There's a thing called the CFRs, Frederick. The Code of Federal Regulations. You can find them in any public law library. And there are CFRs that specifically pertain to photography in national parks. And they give an absolute, undeniable, unqualifiable right for the public to take pictures in national parks, with some caveats like you can't go off the road where the public can usually go, and you can't create a traffic problem or require security. But as long as you're just, you know, out of the way and going where everybody else can go, you have an absolute codified right to take a picture in a national park. But even with that in mind, I will almost always stop in at the ranger station and say, hi, I'm Scott Bourne. I'm a wildlife photographer. I'm going to be working up in Antelope Canyon. Just wanted to let you know, so that you don't have any reason to be worried. This is who I am. This is what I'm doing. And oftentimes, not only will they be nice about it, they'll say, oh, well, wow, we saw a big herd over here, and they'll even give you pointers. So that's cool. I think just telling them what you're doing, the ones that do have legitimate concerns, the ones that aren't just badge heavy or out trying to make a buck, those who do maybe for whatever reason think that somehow this could be a terroristic threat, you help reduce those concerns by identifying yourself. And we shouldn't have to do all this. I get it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But why not make it easy? If the photograph is important and the photographs are important, then I say that's how you handle it.
Here's a wrinkle for that whole, air quote, professional-looking camera thing. What happens when Lytros start showing up?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Because they don't look like professional-looking cameras. They don't even look like cameras.
It's like, I've got this little thing that looks like a kaleidoscope, and I can see your heart beating with it. I mean,
exactly.
It's going to really make it hard for, Paul Blart Mall Cop to arrest you.
Yeah.
But, that's the real issue. We're dealing with
this is not a camera. This is my asthma inhaler.
Have you seen that movie, Paul Blart Mall Cop?
No, I haven't seen that.
You need to rent that movie because that's the guy that stops me everywhere I go when I have my camera.
Oh, dude.
He rides up on like a Segway with a little yellow flashing light. Oh, excuse me, Jerry, what are you doing? And my usual response is, any damn thing I want.
Nice. Nice. I would love to. We should like next time in Vegas, Scott, we should like shoot an interaction like that. So have like purposely put you in a situation where a mall cop will come accost you and videotape the whole thing and put it online.
Yeah. Just so long as it's a mall cop and not a real cop, because our real cops here are not necessarily very.
That would make some good video. Scott.
Yeah. Watch Scott get food in his neck with a billy club.
Hey, look at that Scott Bourne on the strip with a combat boot on the back of his neck.
I do not need the money that badly, thank you. Those of you who are interested in the money, this is a good place to come because we just paid like a $250,000 settlement to some guy who had that experience. So if that's what you're into, come on by. But $250,000 doesn't mean that much to me. I know it's a sensitive subject and I know that we were hard on it, but we were doing it to make a point. It's called hyperbole. We're trying to get you thinking. So don't get mad. Get busy. Let's take a couple of questions that did filter in from our audience, Mr. Frederick.
Yes.
And we have a couple that are worthy, I think, of answering. Actually, we do have one from Brad Seifert on the D800 who said he agrees with my initial opinions on the 36 megapixels, but he has a question. Would dialing down the image size of the photos being shot to the medium quality, which is around 20 megapixels, would that be a viable option for the camera, and would that make it provide better quality? Do you ever do things like that? I know we talked about that years ago on TWIP with Alex, about downsizing some of these cameras. Did anybody ever try that to see if it works?
No, I have never tried it. I tend to just throttle my cameras up to whatever they can, the best quality they can provide. So, throttling it down has never really been an option for me. It's like, I'm shooting raw and I'm shooting, I want to scrape as much data off that sensor as I can possibly scrape off of it. So dialing it down is not in my, future. So I don't know. I don't know if that's an answer, but that's what I do.
Well, I in theory, I can understand why people think it would work, but I've never actually tried it because I'm with you. I tend to think, I want to work with the most data possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gives me the best chance. So, like I said, we'll talk again about the D800 in March when it actually releases. And by the way, back to that subject briefly, people are asking me how real do I think the March release date is, and I think it's very real because those of us that are NPS members got the email saying, would you like to pre-order? And they only do that when they really can ship.
Yeah. 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 I think it's real as well. I don't think they would, this is not in a market. This is a competitive market. And I don't think they're going to announce and not deliver. They've waited long enough for this thing. So why would they announce it and not, not ship on time?
And conversely, I have not received any such CPS notice on the 1DX or the new lenses recently announced, which we didn't touch on, but there are three new lenses from Canon, two of them with IS. The new 24-70 Mark II is $1,000 more expensive than the original and does not have IS. Go figure.
Yeah.
And
why is that? Why would they leave that off of there? I mean, it seems, especially in this age of Canon leading the pack with regard to video, why would you leave IS off of the lens?
It's shocking to me. I don't know. Again, it's another one of those, my head is being scratched, but I'm going to wait and see, and we'll work on it. Oh, we have a question from, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can say this, Hoi Fi Ling, I think that's how you pronounce that, Hoi from Harrison, New Jersey says, recently went to an auto show and photographed some classic vehicles, went with the telephoto lens to capture details, however, I had the hardest time doing so with the black cars. No matter how high the ISO and flash, most of what I got were just black with very little detail. Any thoughts? I have photographed dark subjects like tree bark and was surprised and excited in a way to run into this problem. I can probably figure it out eventually, but like to hear your opinion. So what we're having an issue with here is Hoi is having trouble holding detail in the blacks. Now, back in our film days, Frederick, everything was about compromise. We made a decision in the field. Do I care about holding the highlights? Or do I care about holding the details in the black? We couldn't have it both ways.
That's correct. But now we can.
Now we can.
So, and how do we do that, Scott?
Well, I mean, there are lots of options. Obviously, HDR would be one.
Yeah.
That would certainly be it. I think that when I photograph a lot of cars, and with flash, I think the problem is you tend to get an all-or-nothing approach if you're using an on-camera flash.
Mm-hmm.
Either get too much detail or not enough.
And you're only exposing, if you're using flash, you're only exposing for whatever the flash can hit anyway.
Exactly. Right. And those of you who are familiar with the inverse square law, and by the way, if you're the photo stig, it's called the inverse square suggestion.
I love that.
If you're familiar with the inverse square law, light falls off really, really fast. So your flash hits a little teeny area of the car and goes poof. Now, I mean, you can have an SB900, which is essentially like a ray gun, and it still goes poof. I prefer to use big soft boxes. It spreads the light out better and it helps move that problem around. But if you're going to have to just make a decision initially, Hoi, that the blacks are what matters and expose for the blacks. That's the first way to start getting used to dealing with this problem. Expose for the blacks, holding detail on the blacks, see what that looks like, then start bringing in some HDR. Frederick, do you have any other suggestions?
Yeah, if he's going to expose for the blacks, and he's going to, presumably if he's at an auto show and indoors in some convention center, that's going to result in really long exposure times, tripod. Right, on a black car. So if you're going in there, bring a tripod. If you're bringing a tripod, then you're going to hit some other issues with the security and all those guys in there. So get cleared to bring your tripod in there and bring a tripod, get your wide angle lens, get some nice angling on that, lock that thing down and do what Scott says, you know, expose for the blacks in the car and just play around with it. I would do some HDR of it, get lots of data in there so that when you bring it back into the computer later, you can get that shot. But don't just walk up to it and put the camera on auto and snap a shot and say, whoa, it's too dark, you know, because it's going to take some forethought, especially extremely dark subjects like a black car and inside, or extremely light subjects, you know, like a white car on a beach, you know, you're going to have to take some measures to make sure that you're thinking about that exposure so you can get a good image back in the computer later.
All right. I like that very much. All right. Let's take one more question here. This is from Bangalore, India, because we are internationally beloved here at Photo Focus, from Sarkar, an amateur photographer. In street photography, we do not ask for model releases. Is it fine to sell these prints or submit to photo competitions? Well, in Bangalore in particular, I do not know the law, nor am I an attorney here in the United States, so I can't provide you with legal advice, Sarkar, but I can tell you that it's no problem to take a picture of somebody in the street in the United States. I don't know what the laws are in India. But it's always a good idea, whether someone tells you you need them or not, to get a model release, in my experience, because that way you just got it covered. What do you think, Frederick?
I 100% agree, especially if down the line you decide, hey, look at this great shot I got. And again, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV or any of that stuff. So if you get this great shot of a person in a public space where there's no expectation of privacy, and you're like, wow, look at this great shot, I'm going to submit this to iStock or something like that, you're not going to be able to without having a model release. And Scott, I know you have your own opinions about iStock and microstock photography. Notwithstanding that, you know, if you want to use it for anything commercial, they're going to and there's a recognizable person in that shot, regardless of the expectation of privacy, they're going to require you to have permission from that person to use their likeness in this commercial application.
I don't hate on iStock. I would never myself try to make a living that way because I think my photos are worth more than 50 cents a piece. But I have friends who I admire, trust, respect, like, and care about. Nicolzi, mm-hmm. one of the most famous people, Rich Legg.
Yep.
They make very good livings on iStock, and my hat's off to them. I'm not going to work that hard to make that kind of money. But if you want to use that, you can. But you're right. The point is if you want to get it onto something like iStock, you're going to need a release. There's a great little app that I have on my iPad and my iPhone called Easy Release. Do you see that one, Fred?
I've seen several. I don't know if I've seen that particular one.
That one works really well, and it creates everything you need right for you. So if you're carrying your iPhone and you've got Easy Release on it, and there may be one available for those of you using the Android, you know, that you're always ready for a model release.
And yeah, the one I've seen, it even allows you to take a picture of the model so that her photo's with the release.
Exactly. This one does that, and that's what I love about it. They can't say, well, like, that wasn't me. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, how come your picture's right here?
Yeah, which is cool because it gets the photo, and then if it's the same app I'm thinking about, it also geo-stamps it. So it's like,
yep.
This is you at this time on this location, and here's your signature with your finger. So there's no room for error, whereas with a paper release, you could have forged it or whatever.
And with professional models, what I ask them to do is hold a picture of their driver's license right next to their face.
Oh, nice.
Because now we establish both their age, which is important because in the United States you have to be of what's called the age of majority to sign a contract, and the fact that they are who they say they are, and that's their picture on the driver's license, and there's no questions asked.
And then you have them hold up a picture of the front of today's newspaper so that you can
I actually used to do the newspaper thing, but because of this app's built-in functionality with that regard, I don't need to anymore. But I did actually used to have the model hold up today's newspaper and the driver's license and the whole nine yards because
wow, that's cool. I was just joking.
It's because in the 80s there was a rash of lawsuits by models who just had some fly by night attorneys who said, well, you can sue and a bunch of these guys will settle because they won't know what to do. So we started taking steps to protect ourselves. So I've even had models, you know, sign very detailed releases and still sue because they didn't like how the picture was used. And it's like, you know, sorry, you said I could do anything I want with it, so I did.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show talking about model releases and all that stuff. Because that's a minefield that if you decide that you want to start shooting people and you're doing the TFP from Model Mayhem and all that, you need to understand the rules, laws, and regulations around what you can and can't do.
And by the way, depending on where you're hearing this show, we have listeners in 40 countries to Photo Focus. But I believe, for instance, in France, particularly in Paris, there are very strict laws about this that are completely different than the United States. Mm-hmm. And then there are cultural issues. For instance, if you're on an Indian reservation, while it may be legal, it's considered extraordinarily rude to take a photograph of a person without their permission, and generally rude if you don't offer a tip. Additionally, certain Indian tribes will not allow you to photograph women of childbearing age for religious reasons. So there are all kinds of things to investigate if you're going to get into this. But the best advice pertaining to this question is always, 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 times a billion, alwayses, get a model release. That way, you'll be square.
Right. If you're going to use it for anything, because in a lot of cases, if you're in tourist mode and you're just walking around taking pictures of random things and you get people in there, that doesn't mean that, oh, you put on your 24-70, now you need to carry 500 model releases to get all the people in the crowd.
But my point is, what if you're not intending to shoot professionally, but you get a great shot? You want the ability to get the release.
Yeah.
And that's why I like having my iPhone with me because it's got that app on it and I don't have to carry any paper releases. You sort of sign. I carry a little stylus pen in my iPhone case that acts like a pen and they can just sign their name right on the deal. Or you can use your fingernail. It works really well.
Yeah.
Well, Frederick, it's always good to have you on the show. When you're not on the show, where would you like me to send people to find you?
You can send people to my Twitter account. They can find me at twitter.com/FrederickVan. or my new site, MediaBytes.com with a Y.
And spell Frederick Van for those who aren't paying attention.
It is just Frederick, FREDERICKVAN, Frederick Van.
And seriously, folks, if you're not following Frederick, I don't know why. If you're following me, you should be following him.
That's right.
And you can follow me at Scott Bourne, all one word, S-C-O-T-T-B-O-U-R-N-E on Twitter. Also, check out photofocus.com, where 7 days a week we have free photography information. If you're interested in becoming a professional photographer, you might run over to goingpro2011.com, where Monday through Friday, Skip Cohen and I, Skip the ex-president of Hasselblad USA, vice president at Polaroid, and one of the leading forces behind WPPI and Rangefinder magazine, he and I put that together. And of course, don't forget our new book, Going Pro. It's available in bookstores now and on Amazon. Thank you for keeping it in the top 10 in the photo category professional since its launch. We appreciate that support. That's all the time we have for this edition of the Photo Focus podcast. We're here on the 5th, the 15th, and the 25th of each and every month. So I'm going to leave you like I always do. Go out there and make pictures. Don't just take pictures. See you on the next Photo Focus.